Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Thursday morning to you. Thank you for joining us. We always appreciate you listening. 251-343-0106. Coming up here in about 30 minutes, John Gray is kind of speaking on behalf of Tommy Tuberville's gubernatorial effort. And we'll at least ask some questions about the residency challenge and kind of the way it's been explained to me is all this stuff in the courts, it doesn't matter. The arbiter of eligibility, constitutional eligibility, be governor, will be the Alabama legislature. But we'll listen to someone who's way more steeped in knowledge on this than I am. But that's John Gray coming up about a half hour. I also get his kind of take on some of the local races around here. And I feel like the electorate's changed. Things are different. You run campaigns differently now. That's coming up in 30 minutes. April Maury Fogel from 1819 News, who's doing a lot of radio up in Birmingham here lately. Surprise. You could never have enough April Maury Fogel from 1819 News on FM Talk 106.5. And then finally, I put him on the schedule today for Breitbart News, my colleague there. Bradley Jay will be with us, and we'll talk about the Trump's interactions here with the United States Senate. A lot of different perspectives. He met with the Senate yesterday, and what they're trying to determine here, what they're trying to accomplish, I guess, before the August recess. Also, we're on Supreme Court watch. We may get a ruling on the birthright citizenship case this morning. I'm not as optimistic on that. I think you'll have, at least Thomas and Alito one way. I don't know about the sort of swing votes on the court now. And certainly the Democrats on the court are going to go the other way. But we'll see. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. That's how you interact with the program. I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. I listened to Rob Hulbert from Lanyap talk about the election cycle and the outside PAC money and the American Conservative Fund. Well, we know where the money came from. It's we know it was DraftKings and sports betting. And we think we know who was kind of running the point on that here in Alabama. There's a lot of sports betting interest. It's not hard to figure out and make the connection. But it's dark money. I don't think there's anything the state of Alabama could do. Maybe they could change some of the reporting requirements. But here's the deal with these mailers. And just stick with me here. What if they're printed in Georgia? Mailed from a P.O. box in Georgia. What power does the state of Alabama have over anything outside the state arriving via the U.S. Postal Service? I mean, we kind of have this whole the free speech. It becomes a federal question now, crossing the state lines. How much can they be involved in state races? Sure, we could pass laws, but then, these so-called dark money groups will just take them to court. Because I hear this and I hear that we need to do something. And even Speaker Ledbetter has said as much. But it's a constitutional question after Citizens United about free speech. So it's hard to discern, like, really, what can the state of Alabama do legally? And I'm not for any of this. I mean, this is all, you know, where I am on the gambling question. You know where my sensibilities lie, special sports betting. But trying to crack down on it is going to be a tough thing to do. So that to me obviously raises some questions like, well, what can you do other than it? Now that the PAC's operating within the state's borders, that's different. They can pass laws, but even then there's a First Amendment issue you've got to work through. So the way it is, you have these third parties and they're free to do what they want within the law, regardless of who's funding them. But if they're directly contributing to a campaign, then they're subject to election laws, to campaign finance laws. And that's sort of the rub, guys. And my theory on this is, so I was inundated with these mailers. I got them just like everybody else. And a couple of observations, they did crowd out the message from the campaign, the direct mailers from the campaigns. I was getting 5 Chris Elliott mailers a week. And then some of these members in other parts of the state spoke out against them. The Senate pro Tim Garland Gudger put a video. They were all pro Gudger, but he didn't like the way he was being portrayed. And he wanted people to know that these weren't from him. The same with Doug Harwell and his race, that they did more harm than good. Well, what can you do? Now, these guys in the legislature are smart guys. They kind of know. But here's my theory on it. This was just a show of force. This was a flex. This is like a more, this wasn't about this election cycle. This was to show you that if you got on the wrong side of gambling, what could happen to you? We're gonna flood your district with direct mail, and you're not going to like it. There's nothing you could do about it. Because I'll tell you something, you want to get these guys upset? This happened during caucus, during the quadrennium, in the caucus. There was a direct mail piece sent out about medical freedom in districts of some of the members on the House Health Committee, and they were out for blood. They were upset, and they were accusing other members of being behind it. So here's one Supreme Court case. Strikes Hawaii's default ban on guns on private property that's open to the public. So Hawaii other states can presumably prohibit the carrying of handguns on private property open to the public, such as retail stores. They struck that down. Hawaii, I guess, if you are if it's private property, you're not allowed to carry a gun if it's open to the public. So if it's a Walmart or a grocery store or whatever they have in Hawaii, you're not allowed to carry your gun. And Supreme Court ruled that unconstitutional. That law. Now, if you're a private property, I would assume if it's your private property, you don't want someone carrying a gun, then it's up to you. But the state of Hawaii cannot prohibit it. So that's the first one up. Kind of keeping an eye on this as they come out. But back to the campaign finance question, and here in Alabama, I think these guys are trying to show gambling's coming. lawmakers are getting ready for it. Once November comes and goes, it's going to be a full court press on gambling. It's going to look, if you guys remember in 2018, the election wrapped up there. Governor Ivey wins re-election. You have a new legislature. And they went all on this PR campaign for the Rebuild Alabama Act, which was just raising your gas tax so we could repave roads and build the West Alabama Corridor, apparently. They're going to do the same thing with gambling here. And we're going to have the same discussions we've been having for the... I've been on here in Mobile for like... It'll be 6 years, 7 years. I don't know. Came in 2020, so it'll be 6 years next month. And the 2 years before that, when I was on in Huntsville, it was this. You don't just get gambling. You don't just get a lottery. You get everything. And they know that there's a good chance, you know, the Senate's lost some votes. Greg Allbritton was a blow to the gambling push, losing that race, even though he voted against it. But you certainly have a guy, Terry Waters, the presumptive state Senate elect, anti-gambling. He's not going to vote for it. Rusty Glover, Jack Williams was against it, but he didn't want to get on Alpha's bad side. He voted against it. And you look at North Alabama, the other vote, we got Tom Butler. Whoever's in his seat, and it'll either be a guy named John Roberts, who's a Republican nominee, or it could be a Democrat. But you likely lose that. That will be go from no to yes. Dan Roberts, I think he lost his primary. I think the guy who beat him is probably a yes on gambling as well. So the numbers are kind of lining up for the gamblers. Lance Bell and Chris Elliott were two votes that they were really working hard in 2024 that went no, that were yes at one point. I think that they can woo them over to their side. But that's going to be it, guys. Once we get past the election on November 3rd, from November 3rd till when they gavel in, it's going to be gambling, 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 gambling. And I think all this stuff with the ACF was just straight up, hey, you better be for this or this could be coming your way. Intimidation. So, you know, you got to kind of look behind the scenes or try to psychoanalyze it a little bit. And there's just not, despite what you might have heard, there's just not a lot of money behind backing anti-gambling forces. There was the last time we tried in 99, you had outside of the state gambling, bankrolling anti-gamblers in the state. And I don't think that's going to be there. I would be surprised. The world's just changed so much in those 27 years. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the
to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Another Supreme Court decision. This is a big one. Supreme Court has sided with the Trump administration. 6-3. Non-citizens who show up to the southern border do not automatically count as asylum seekers under the federal law and can be turned away. So, we knew this. Like, these guys got this wrong this whole time, and here we are. So you can't just show up, claim asylum, and then get some kind of temporary status. Can't do it anymore. And that shuts the border down even more. 6-3, too. It wasn't even close, guys. Can't wait to read the minority opinion on that. I'm sure it's just steeped with brilliant legal philosophy. But the minority opinion will not prevail here. It's fodder, I guess. 251-343-0106. Let's look at what is National Catfish Day. Rebecca, I don't care what Tubbs has done. I will never vote for Doug Jones. I made a mistake when he was running against Roy Moore, and the lesson was learned. He is much more dishonest than Tuberville. In fact, that only taught me to vote Republican. Yeah, the problem, it's an apples and oranges thing to try to compare the 2017 special election to November 3rd. Yes, Roy Moore won that race. I mean, lost that race by just a small, small, small margin. And even though he was A, Roy Moore, B, unprecedented Democrat turnout, enthusiasm, a lot of Democrats just eager to take it to Donald Trump. And C, don't forget, he was being accused at the time of being a pedophile. And he still just won by like 1% or something. The difference here is the 2017 race was with the exception of maybe two or three places that had other races on the ballot around the state, very small elections. The difference here is that the that was a low turnout event. It was the middle of December. When have you ever voted in December? And then you have other things on the ballot. You have other statewide elections, including a U.S. Senate race, lieutenant governor race, an AG race, ag, a bunch of legislative races. This is not going to be a low turnout event with one thing on the ballot. It's just not. The comparison there is intellectually dishonest to say you never know. Jeff, I don't give a damn if Coach Tuberville robs a bank. I ain't voting for Doug Jones. Mike, Rob can spend all he wants, but sleazy Doug Harwell could say all he wants that he didn't ask for the tax on Glover, but he sure as hell played off of it. He even changed his commercials up about it, and someone somewhat repeated the points on gambling. But, give Doug Harwell the benefit of the doubt here. I don't think he was behind it at all. I really don't. I think he had nothing to do with it. I talked to these lawmakers, I didn't talk to Doug, but I talked to a lot of these guys, and they wanted it to stop, and they didn't. But here's what they didn't want, guys, and this is what you need to know. They didn't want to make these guys mad at them by saying, hey, stop. Now, what Gudger did was, maybe different than the rest, but there's a fear out there. Like, I don't want to make these guys upset at me. I don't want to get on these guys' bad side because then they'll start sending out mail attacking me. I'm just going to play it off and act if it's like it's no big deal. That's what they had to do. 251-343-0106. More Supreme Court rulings on the way, it appears. Another immigration one. We'll get to figure that out during the break. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
With a That's RN News. I'm Rich Thomason in Washington.
All right, let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show from Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Thursday morning. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. Real quick before we get to our next guest, another Supreme Court decision handed down, another 6-3 ruling here that the Trump administration can indeed end temporary protected status for these Haitian and Syrian asylum seekers that he could deport them. Remember this whole Haitian controversy that bubbled up a few years ago and, you know, that they had temporary status here? Well, that status is indeed, as we have learned from the Supreme Court, is temporary. Joining us now on the line, you may know him, seen him on TV around here in this area, but a friend of mine, a political consultant, John Gray, joins us on the line. John, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Hey, thank you for making time for us. We really do appreciate it. Before we get into what we got you on here for, we're kind of a week and a couple of days removed from the primary runoff. Does anything catch your eye there?
Ooh, a lot. You know, apathy is very high. It's kind of, I guess, an oxymoron, like a big shrimp. You know, a lot of people not voting. You know, we've been looking at it internally with a couple of pollsters and different groups that we deal with about what's driving it. And it's weird. You probably saw the results of the Democrats picking up, almost doubling their average primary turnout, and Republicans dropping not quite 50%, but about 30%. That has not gone unnoticed. A lot of it has to do with kind of a changing of the guard, President Trump being in his potential last term. And then, of course, what's going on with the economy in Iran. We're looking at the base. So if there's anything that caught my eye, that's probably number one on the list, is finding out why and making sure that gets corrected before the general election.
Yeah. And, you know, the polling out there, now there's a lot of garbage polls, but we just don't. The science of polling in Alabama is very complicated.
Horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible, Jeff.
And it just, there's a problem here. And I think the disconnect is just finding, trying to define a likely Republican primary or primary runoff voter. And that's where the system is really blowing it.
I had some uber local races that are old established clients of mine. And, We drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled voters. I probably spent probably close to six figures on voter ID and polling in general on a couple of those races, which would be unheard of at that level, but for exactly what you're talking about. And by the way, I think the voters out there who don't do what you and I do, and frankly, even me who does what I do, we were nauseated by the number of people who want to know how we're going to vote. And I'm going to tell everybody on this phone call, I don't answer them either. And it's hard for me as a person who needs that information to get upset with people who don't want to give it because it's intrusive. But to your point, we also all read the newspaper and listen to folks like you on the radio and say, well, which direction is something going? Well, we don't know which direction it's going if you don't answer those questions. So it's a double-edged sword, but you're right. Especially Republicans and especially people who are relatively happy with the way things are going, they don't want to respond, which means you lose a lot of your MAGA and Republican base influence in those polls, which, by the way, I think is why a lot of people were surprised at the turnout in races like lieutenant governor and attorney general. And U.S. Senate.
Right. And we were going into this, John, as early as January, or late as January and into the spring, just with 50% or more undecided in some marquee races. I mean, it's not unusual to have a lot of undecideds, but if you declare at the very get-go, yes, I am going to vote in the primary to primary runoff, and then you leave the answers blank on the rest of the survey. I mean, there's something, they're not not assessing this right, or they're not getting to the exact science of this or something.
So that's a brilliant observation, because we have never had that level of undecided at the top of the ticket when you're looking at determining whether people are going to go vote. People, like you just said, people say, I'm going to go vote. I'm very likely to go vote. But who am I voting for? I don't know. And that's not the mentality of a voter. A voter is driven to go vote. I call them professional voters. They're the 4 out of 4 perfect voters. These are the people that set their calendar a year in advance. They make plans for lunch on election day. They're going to take their wife. Whatever it is, these are professional voters. We know they're coming, okay? They make up about 20% what you just saw in the turnout. They make up about 20% of your total voting population. But when everybody else is telling you they're coming to vote and they don't know who for, you're right, that's a problem. But the other thing that was revealed here is most voters voting in those races are not coming for those races. They're coming for the top of the ticket. U.S. Senate, you know, has a tendency to be higher because it's a federal office on the ballot as a physical location. But the ballot starts really in people's minds with president and governor. Not having a significantly contested governor's race did not drive people out. And I think on the Democrat side, you see a little bit of that from the boost they got. But on the Republican side, you now default back to your lieutenant governor, your U.S. Senate, your attorney general. And for most people, a lot of times it comes down to milk toast. Well, they're all conservative. I don't really care, but I like this guy 5% more than I like the other. So the observation is brilliant. All of us saw it, and all of us knew that was going to drive low voter turnout because people were not motivated. But it is also not terribly surprising, because when you look at a full ballot survey in a traditional cycle, you see a lot of fallout. Jeff, you know, we call them undervotes. It's right. It's very common that people will vote, 2 million votes for governor and then 1.5 million votes for lieutenant governor. We call them undervotes for a reason. So, again, it's a brilliant observation, and it's one that we took note of, and that's why a lot of people knew we were going to look at somewhere in the teens to 20% on voter turnout. But it also is not completely unheard of or uncommon, because the top of the ticket usually masks that a little bit. In this case, you didn't have that.
Yeah, and last question on this, because I think the whole – and you and I have talked about this. I think the whole game's changed, like the messaging and the way we reach voters and the way consultants, try to target with, campaign stuff or whatever. It's not landing. It's clearly not landing, because you have the undecideds. There's something's changed in the kind of political culture we live in, that people maybe aren't reacting to or responding to, whatever it is, be it mailers or, the TV commercials or whatever we are using to promote a candidate. I don't think it's reaching voters like it once had.
I agree with you. There are people that would not agree with you. I agree with you, because I saw this. I've been doing this scarily coming up on 30 years now, I guess, since I left the music business. So really about 28. Back around George Bush, turn of the century time, going into Barack Obama, 2008, that time period became what I would call very cookie cutter. I know you were very engaged in starting to write, and I think you were doing South Alabama stuff too, some of that time still. So you were probably eyes wide open looking at the political spectrum, and it may not have felt that way to you, but to those of us who had been in it at that point for 8 or 10 years, it started feeling very cookie cutter, very, oh, okay, here's what we do. Here's the 3 ads. Here's the 4 direct mail pieces. I have felt that way for the last 2 or 3 years. It's almost like, do you remember in 14 and 16 when every direct mail piece you got had a picture of Nancy Pelosi on it?
Yep.
I kind of feel that way again. And it takes something like a Donald Trump to break that mold and force people what we would call a paradigm shift. So I actually agree with you. There are other people who make money doing what I do who think their cookie cutter plans work great. I don't, but I'm like you. I think at some point people are going to see the voter turnout and say, hey, you got to change your message. This isn't working.
Yeah, it's just there's got to be somebody who invents the new greatest thing. And we just, at least in this state, haven't figured that out. Hey, let's shift gears here. The So if you've been listening to this station for any amount of time on Thursday mornings, the residency question of one Tommy Tuberville, our senior United States senator, as it pertains to his gubernatorial election, is a question. But I think they're missing a lot of this, especially with these court challenges, that this really they're not really analyzing this with the proper assumptions at play. But you can explain this much better than I. Walk us through this.
Simple explanation. Democrats can't win on the issues. They want to win in the courtroom. We've seen this with President Trump. We've seen this actually really for a long time. It wasn't just President Trump. They did this in 2020 with Coach. This should not be surprising. Again, when we talked about professional voters and Republicans, and a lot of your listeners will understand, if somebody gets under your skin, you don't want to campaign against them. You just want to take them out. You know, we've seen the 86-47 and stuff. We're seeing that now with Coach. I don't know if y'all have seen this. There's a couple of websites that have popped up with 86 Coach on it. There's a lot of scary similarities. And I think when people get under your skin and they're willing to rock the boat, people just, I don't know, they lose their mind. What do they call it? Trump derangement syndrome, TDS. I mean, maybe we need CDS. I don't know. But my honest opinion, short answer is they cannot beat him on the issues. They cannot beat the Republicans. The Democrats are lost. They don't have a message. This is not about DEI. This is not about, you know, defunding the police. They're just flat out wrong on their global messaging. Now, it is a lot more complicated than that. But the details are where they want to trip you up, okay? Did Coach have a driver's license? When did he give his Florida driver's license back? These are the things they want to get into. Well, Jeff, I know you moved in and out of Alabama over the last two decades. Did you put your old driver's license in an envelope and mail it back to the state you came from? No, and nobody else did either. It's stupid. But they want to get you on those little things. It doesn't matter that Coach got a driver's license in March of 2019. It doesn't matter they think that Coach went out and registered to vote in March of 2019. It doesn't matter that he paid taxes in Alabama. By the way, as allegedly a resident of Florida, where they have no income tax, he voluntarily then paid Alabama state income tax on his income. Their argument doesn't make sense when you look at the big facts, but they want to get in the deep. They want to all ignore that. That doesn't matter because he voted in Florida in 2018. He did vote in Florida in 2018 because he was in the process of moving to Alabama. He had not registered to vote in Alabama, so he registered to. He was already registered to vote in Florida, so he voted in Florida. None of that matters because nobody has ever claimed Coach's permanent residency in Alabama until March of 2019. So what he did in November of 2018 is totally irrelevant to the residency discussion. Unless
it was 8 years ago. So, I mean, why are we doing this? Because it's a seven-year window. This happened from this day. I mean, you know, I guess seven and some change, though, whenever Election Day rolls around. But it's that's the 2018 stuff doesn't matter as it pertains to this discussion.
I completely agree with you, which is why I'm saying it is not a complicated issue. They want to make it a complicated issue because either they want to sell subscriptions, they want people to read, it's a fascinating story, or they can't win on the issues. And, of course, remember, there's different groups pushing this. And I'm not such a conspiracy theorist. I'm going to tie them all together, though many people have. I'm not. I think there's different reasons different people do things. But remember, I also started out by saying this is actually really easy. Let me give you the easy explanation. In the 1901 Constitution, coming out of the Civil War, we already previously had a residency requirement. But they changed the residency requirement prior to the 1901 Constitution to make it a resident citizen. It was not a resident. It was a resident citizen. You don't have to be a history scholar, although I've paid enough lawyers in the last few months to probably be one right now, to understand what was going on in the late 1800s. As a result of that and the carpetbaggers and the fact that a lot of people died, a lot of people didn't have homes anymore. They were moving around. They didn't want somebody from Manassas or from New York coming into Alabama and becoming governor. And I'm also not going to lie to you and tell you that it wasn't a little bit out of slavery and a lot of racism that was also still coming apart after the Civil War, that you had to be a resident citizen. And if you don't know why the citizen would be important, you're going to have to go back and read the history books of the fall of the Civil War. But they didn't want a carpetbagger. They wanted somebody who showed loyalty to Alabama. And if you read the history of the convention and when that was written, that's what they were looking for. They wanted loyalty to Alabama because so many people had moved. So many homes had been destroyed. You really didn't know who was and wasn't born and bred somewhere. Now, Tommy Tuberville has been representing Alabama in the United States Senate since he was elected in 2020. I don't know what you could more do to establish your loyalty to a state than that. And by the way, the law says, and the Supreme Court of Alabama says, and the Supreme Court of the United States says, and Section 35 of the Alabama Constitution says, if you establish residency, you maintain that residency, and that residency cannot be taken away from you unless you voluntarily relinquish it and establish residency somewhere else. Anybody who doesn't believe me, go read Section 35 of the Constitution, and you can text Jeff, and he can get me. I'll get you some court cases if you're really bored. But Section 35 of the Constitution says it explicitly. A temporary absence from the state not void residency.
And we're real short on time here, but the point that I think this is key to this discussion, is at least right now, is does it say that you can't run for governor? This is, you can't be governor. This is not a court question. This is settled in the legislature, right?
Correct. So let me hit that last point real quick and jump on this one. Once he established residency to run for Senate, which everybody agrees he did it. Nobody's tried to kick him out of the U.S. Senate. Once he established that residency, the question becomes, when did he give it up and where did he establish it? And the facts show neither ever happened. So I want to leave that there. The second piece is, you're right, we do not have what's called ballot access. Many people locally in South Alabama will remember this when Stephen Nodine was considering running for mayor of Mobile, and there was a lot of talk. In fact, Lan Yap, your previous guest on the show, they wrote several articles about the fact that Nodine could run for the office, but he could not serve in the office. I know that sounds dumb, but that is the same fact here. They don't want the courts deciding the candidates for the people. So we don't have ballot access. There are a few provisions that will kick you off the ballot. I'm not going to confuse anybody with them. None of them have anything to do with this. But this will be decided not by a court. If there is a debate, it would be decided by the legislature after someone is elected, because the Constitution did not want a county judge deciding who and who would not be governor. They wanted to get as close to the people as they can, which, of course, is your representative democracy and what we have there in the legislature. So, Jeff, this is a lot to compress in, and I do talk fast. I hope people got it. But I hope people will walk away with one understanding. There's no way, with a $12 million campaign budget, seven lawyers, a room full of consultants, that this guy planned to run for governor and was not properly qualified and didn't have the paperwork. And if you think that's not true, I got some land for you in Florida.
John, we appreciate it. Thanks for hopping on. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you, buddy. See you.
All right, John Gray, ladies and gentlemen. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. April Marie Fogel coming up in the next hour, 11 o'clock hour. Bradley J., my colleague at Breitbart News. So please stay tuned for that. Jason, good morning, Jeff. Do you find it odd we haven't heard a word from Mayor Spiro on the gay banners? And don't you think they should combine gay month with Mardi Gras, since both involve men dressing up in colorful sequined costumes? No, there's a historical legacy of Mardi Gras. But I believe the Mayor Tarragatis has been on vacation. But we've asked, but we have not heard back from him. Tim, Jeff, I know Doug Harwell personally. Please don't call him a lawmaker. I can't say that on air, Tim. I don't think to associate him with what ACF was doing is just totally unfair. So these guys are doing this in the entire state. They were going after, in some cases, incumbents, but a lot of cases they were wink, nod, nod, bolstering incumbents. But I like I said, I don't think it had anything to do with that. The election was going to play out the way it was. They just wanted to sow some seeds of fear that if you get on our bad side, this is what we're going to do. We're going to carpet bomb your district's mailboxes with these glossy mailers. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.